la 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 la.
Faraz, you know what time it is.
I love this song.
Christmas cheer is in the air, and terrible renditions of holiday themes are also on the air. Let's do it.
It's December 24th and Holly's having the park. When I see a man chilling with his dog in the park.
Okay. I was telling you this off the air, but I think 1 pound fish man, first of all, needs to be the opposite of deported.
Here he comes.
Oh. Here we go, ready?
Hang on.
Picked up the wallet, but then I took a pause, took the license out, said Santa Claus.
$1 million
in it. Code 100 full of G's, enough to buy a boat and matching car with me. But I'd never steal from Santa.
Where
did
he go? Did he get deported already?
6 for 5 on 1 pound 8. Very, very good. And very,
1 pound
8. 1 pound 8. 1 pound 8. Come on, ladies. Come on to the 1 pound 8.
I feel bad because we have a guest and he has no idea what's going on right now, I'm sure. All right. For those of you who are unaware of what's happening in your ears right now, you're listening to the annual ThingsThatSays.net awards show. Merry Christmas, wherever you are. And what we do every year on Christmas is we basically talk about all of our favorite and least favorite things during the year. And as a Christmas gift, we gather around the proverbial dinner table and we just talk for a very long amount of time. And usually what we like to do is we like to bring on a special guest. And this year is no different. We're bringing on right now from WrestleNomics Radio. He does a lot of stuff with the Wrestling Observer and Figure Four Weekly. Chris Harrington is here to talk about all the wrestling stuff and other stuff with us. Chris, it's great to have you, sir.
Well, it's great to listen to awesome British crazy hip-hop remixes of Christmas songs. That made my day right there.
That is all we do on this show, is British remixes of things.
I try and bring Des various amounts of different random things. Like, for instance, last year we were obsessed with an African song.
Yes, we were. Give it up for Africa. Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of...
You know, it's appropriate since my Twitter handle is Mookie Ghana, so I appreciate that.
Well, there we go. All right, so the awards show, Chris. Well, first of all, how much wrestling, Chris? Because I know you're a big fan. How much wrestling do you watch? Do you think on an annual basis? Do you watch a bunch of different promotions? Or are you more of a strictly WWE guy?
You know, I do watch a lot of WWE, especially since a friend of mine got hired there. And so I enjoy watching, especially when he's on TV.
Yes.
And I do a lot of podcasts on other people's stuff. And I hear a lot about the great stuff that's happening in other feds. And sometimes that drives me to go out and seek it out. But a lot of times I let the other people kind of do the wading through the muck and call out to me either when something is really, really good, like something cool in New Japan or ROH, or when something is really, really crazy, because probably my favorite wrestler of all time is Survival Tobita from a Japanese indie sleaze fed called SWPC. A little bit of everything.
So for those who are listening who aren't aware, this is going to be a mostly wrestling-centric show. So if you're more of a fan of the culture, my pop stuff, sorry, you're out of luck. We are going to try and squeeze in some pop culture stuff as well, but I'm looking at the notes right now, and a lot of this stuff is going to be wrestling. So if you don't like wrestling, sorry, we ruined Christmas for you. That said, let's...
every year, then.
We ruin Christmas every year for our listeners, and I don't care.
Now, I know our guest is a numbers guy, so I just want to throw out one number. This is the fourth Things Des Says Award ceremony, and we ignore the first.
Oh, my God. Have we done four of these already?
We've done four of these.
Jesus Christ.
This is the fourth one.
I feel like they get worse every year, so we'll see.
No. Last year's one was pretty good. The first one was terrible.
Well, I'm doing this year Stone Cold Sober, so maybe it'll be a little more structured. Okay. So let's get started with the first award of the year. And this one is very simple. We're building up to the all-coveted Charlie Sloth Award, the Bad Man of the Year. But let's start off with the Wrestler of the Year. Let's start with our guest. Chris, who did you pick this year as your Wrestler of the Year?
You know, I was going through numbers this morning, and somebody really jumped out to me. And as I dissected it, I had to pick him. And that's Cesaro, who you wouldn't necessarily say had necessarily the year that some other people did.
No.
But there's a couple things he did that really struck me this year. Do we want to go around the room and say our picks, or do you want me to give my justification first?
No, I'd love to hear, I'd love to hear your rationale.
Well, one of the first things is, of course, he won the Andre the Giant Battle Royale, yes. thus proving to be the most powerful force in the known universe.
Yes.
Which in itself should just give him the title, because who else has a six-foot trophy that they can brag about this year? But beyond that, what really struck me with Cesaro is, A, this dude had more televised matches than anybody else. He had 99 televised matches in the last 12 months.
Wow.
40 on Raw, 37 on SmackDown. He was in NXT. He had two or three. He main event, he had 7. He had 11 pay-per-views and two others between, like, Saturday Morning Slam or whatever else the other shows were, Tribute to the Troops, I think it was. But he had great matches with so many different people. He had a good match with Randy Orton. He had a good match with Cena. He had a great match with Sami Zayn down in NXT.
Oh my
he
God,
was
yes.
part of a huge tag team with the Real Americans and had a great match against the Dust Brothers. He had a great match against Sheamus in June. He had a good – he got probably the only good match out of RVD we saw in his last return here in August.
Thank you.
He had a great 203's Falls match with a Ziggler in October. So from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, he worked with a whole bunch of different people, and in each one of those, he looked great. Plus, he was getting over there, and it just really struck me when I broke down the numbers that, like, he has a ton of great matches under his belt with a whole bunch of different people. And so it was a screwed-up year because both Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan, who were kind of the chosen ones, for one reason or another, both got hurt.
Right.
And a lot of stuff has gone crazy. And Cesaro, both as a heel and as an almost face, has really gotten over. And he does interesting stuff in his matches, and people, you know, are captivated by it. And I think that's really cool. But you need the kind of wrestler on there. Like, The Miz can be a good heel. But you know what? Frankly, if someone's not a wrestling fan and they see The Miz, they kind of tune out and say, that's kind of a geeky thing.
Yes.
If they watch Cesaro, they're impressed. And I think that's always awesome.
Yeah, I think Cesaro, one thing about him is they started off the year and they had so much they wanted to do with him. Like, they put him with Paul Heyman because they thought that would be like an automatic rocket on this guy. And instead what happened,
they were going to turn him face at the beginning of the year.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought it would have been smart because he was catching on. But then what ended up happening is, and you kind of knew this was going to happen, is it was Cesaro and Brock Lesnar. And one of those two is going to outshine the other. I bet you can guess who it was. And that's exactly what happened. And I think after that, I mean, there's always next year, but I'm looking at what Cesaro is on Raw right now. And he's either non-existent or he's a second guy that's very forgettable. But you're right. In terms of consistency, this dude has been on, I think, for a lot longer than the past year. He has been on his game.
Well, he also got lumbered with the Bad News Barrett stuff, you know, with the Authority, where he was kind of their hitman in the middle of the year, which Bad News Barrett was doing amazingly well.
Yes.
So he kind of got stuck with someone else's gimmick, sort of.
God, but, speaking of people that got injured this year.
Oh, that's a shame.
Bad News Barrett, man. This has been a bad year for injuries. It really has.
Yeah.
All right, Ferez. Let's go to yours, Ferez, for a wrestler of the year.
Now, I was a little bit frustrated with him towards the end of his TNA run.
Oh, no.
Because he just wasn't showing us what he was so famous for at the beginning, 2002, 2003. But this year, AJ Styles has been...
Yes.
No pun intended, has been phenomenal.
Yeah, he's been great, man. Yeah, AJ coming out of his shell. I think TNA, it's a lot less so than WWE. And Chris, let me know if you agree with this. TNA, a lot less formulaic than WWE, but there's still a formula there. And when a guy like AJ Styles is able to sort of break out of the mundane and go to somewhere like New Japan, where A, he's...
And Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Where A, he's treated like a legitimate star, and B, he's able to have these incredibly creative matches with other guys like Okada, like Tanahashi, like Suzuki.
And Elgin.
Oh my God, that series with Elgin. A guy like AJ Styles really is able to find his way and able to shine when he gets into new territories like that.
It's been incredible. One thing that the Voices of Wrestling podcast talked a lot about was the fact that when AJ became an indie star, he started to draw all over the country, you know, 1,000-person crowds. And it was this dichotomy where TNA couldn't draw flies, and suddenly AJ Styles, as a loner, was able to make himself. Goes over to New Japan, has had a great year, with the one exception of that one photo shoot where everybody else is in a suit and he's wearing baggy jeans in the middle of that field. I would say it's been an incredible year. You know, he was a joke when he was on the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot just a year ago. Yeah. And already he seems like a viable modern candidate compared to anyone from Edge all the way down to CM Punk. When you put it up to a guy who's producing great matches, working in a company, the company is successful, and he's made, you know, just really convinced people that he is a legitimate star. And I think it's great. And it's, you know, New Japan's got a lot of great things going for them right now, but AJ Styles is a key acquisition, and it's amazing how well they've protected him. I was doing stats on New Japan just the other day, and guys that have, like, you know, win records over 60-70%, there's not a lot of them, and AJ Styles is one of the very, very few with like a 75% win record. He's like 12-4 in singles matches. So they've really protected him. And even guys like Okada and King Fale and Nakamura and things, and Tanahashi, obviously, they've been protected too. But, you know, they really put AJ Styles up at the top. And that's rare for a company to do, is to bring in an outsider and to just recognize him like that. You know, not since the old days when you saw Stan Hansen or something like that. Have we seen someone really get over in Japan like that for a while?
Yeah, you brought up the Hall of Fame in the Observer, and that was super telling, because I remember a year ago, I think it was just a year ago, where he was finally viable for contention, and he
had that awful thing with Dixie and them.
That, and that coincided with the time that people were voting for the Hall of Fame, and he did terribly, and I remember Dave being not surprised, but at the same time, it was AJ Styles, and he probably should have been voted higher, but that was why. It was that run in TNA that really... It really shows the extent TNA's reach, which is not far at all, even at that point.
Though you will say someone like Bully Ray, I thought he really changed my opinion of him as a wrestler in the last couple of years here in TNA, where he turned it around.
Yeah. Oh, man,
They brought guys like Bully up, but then look what they did to poor old Jeff. Well, he did it to himself for the most part. But Jeff Hardy, who left the WWE, in my opinion, and the biggest babyface in the world at the time. In 2009, and they turned him heel, and since then he hasn't recovered.
No, he's one of those guys that you can't play both ways that way. He needs to be a face. He needs, especially in a promotion like that, you can't get away, because they're not strong enough on the face side to make somebody else that's bigger than him and make you really hate him. It's amazing some of the talent that has gone through TNA and how little they did with him.
Oh, Christ. And yeah, and we're looking at a whole new influx of talent right now. We'll hope things go a little better for them in the new year on Destination America. So my pick for Wrestler of the Year, and I've brought it up a lot of times, he was, in my opinion, the least likely of the Shield to be anything after the Shield's breakup. And they, in fact, made me eat my words, because not only did he become something, but he became the guy that the company decided to go with. And that is Seth Rollins, who not only initiated the turn and breakup of the Shield, but is currently being positioned as pretty much the top heel in the company. And being super protected, as far as I can tell, as far as WWE's even Stephen Booking likes to go. So that for me, it's Seth Rollins, who has just been a part of so many amazing matches this year. He's been the MVP in pretty much every match he's been in. And he's definitely come into his own as a heel character, which I never expected him to do quite as well as he's doing.
Now, I thought Dean Ambrose would be the real bad heel.
And I think he can be potentially, but I think Ambrose too surprised me, because I didn't think Ambrose would do very well as a babyface, and I was wrong. He is one of the most believable dudes on that roster, and when he wants to get revenge on someone, I believe he wants to get revenge on someone. That said, I still don't know why he wants to get revenge on Bray Wyatt.
Why Bray Wyatt hates him.
I don't know.
Tell me this. Do you think him as a movie actor is going to be something that's going to work out, or is it going to be kind of a Ken Kennedy situation where we're all going to forget that he ever did a movie in the first place?
Ambrose,
Ken Kennedy did a movie?
I think it was Behind Enemy Lines, Columbia.
All right,
was
yes.
One of those, number six or something. Yeah, I'm one of my passions is how terrible WWE films have been at making money. So I've not watched any of them, but I have kept track of who's in what. And I discovered that I think The Miz is the most profitable guy next to John Cena that they've had.
Wow.
Wow.
I wish that's a stat they would bring up on TV.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it's because he did a like made-for-TV Lifetime movie, and yeah, it already made money by the day it was sold because it was paid for, and they weren't having to put it into theaters or anything. But him and Grumpy Cap, the two biggest stars on the roster these days.
Oh boy, let me tell you something. When they casted Dean Ambrose in that role as like this crooked cop, I thought they casted him in the perfect role for his on-screen character on WWE TV. Because that's basically the same character he plays every week. So,
well, the man hijacked a food cart. Come on now.
Yeah, I mean that's a very crooked thing to do. So I think if a wrestling fan watches this movie, they're just going to think, yeah, that's Dean Ambrose. He does that all the time, and it's going to be very believable. So I think just the casting worked for him. I don't know if I'm going to have the. I don't think I'm going to be brave enough to actually sit through the movie, but I hope he does well.
Now, can I give a couple of honorable mentions?
Let's hear it.
The Usos have been absolutely fantastic this year.
These are guys, too, that you didn't think were going to... Because for a long time, they were just the guys who were able to have good...
They were out in the cold, weren't they?
Yeah, they could have good wrestling matches, but they really didn't get any exposure beyond, oh, here they are, they're going to lose to so-and-so. But they, not only did they get the titles, they had a good run with the titles, they were
and
able
they had
to,
good matches.
Yes,
that match, the match,
that's the key.
The match with the Wyatts family.
With the Wyatts, guys like Golden Stardust. I mean, these guys were able to have these good long matches on Raw. I think for a big part of the year too, they picked up where the Shield left off in the sense that they were always the one match on the show that had this really good work rate compared to everything else.
Do you remember there was that Raw promo years ago where it's Jimmy and Jay and they're standing there and they actually challenged the announcer, the guy interviewing them. It might have been Tom Phillips, might have been somebody else. And they said, which one of us is Jimmy and which one of us is Jay? And he couldn't get it right. And I just think it's remarkable about how Total Divas has done actually a good job of giving these guys kind of that additional level of personality and recognition that they never would have gotten had they not had, you know, one of their wives on the show and been like peripheral characters.
Yeah. Yeah. The moral of the story is if you want to be recognized, date somebody who has a reality show. Yeah. Sorry to burst your bubble, Lance Storm, but it looks like reality TV did something for wrestling after all.
I'm just sad that Paige is going to be on it next year.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun. I'm going to make you watch it next year. I hope you're ready.
No, you're not. Yeah. Look, if Saraya Knight was on it, I'd watch it happily, but she's not going to be on it. So
you don't know. Maybe she... No, she won't.
No, she won't.
All right. Let's do a little bit of the pop culture stuff. I was looking at things that happened in 2014, guys. You know, speaking of things that happened in 2014, now I'm practicing stand-up on you. This is my segue. Nudes, guys. This was the year of the nude. A lot of... I don't know if you were on the front page of Reddit just a few months ago, Perez. I know you were very excited for these celebrity nude leaks.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes.
No, there's nothing better than waking up on a Monday morning and finding out which celebrity is naked this week.
Oh my God. I wish, let's go back to booking in a wrestling context. I wish they had released these in a more like, you know,
in a calendar form.
Yes. Like one per week. I think perverts of the world would have been much more impressed by that, just being more methodical with the way you put your nudes out. And I'm sure eventually there would be some statistics to support this. But
well, I think the statistics were the fact that it blew up all of Reddit servers. And I'm trying to remember my favorite one, though, because there was this one website, and it was either The Independent or The Mirror, and they had invented their own name for this scandal, and they insisted on using it even though no one else ever used it. It was like Slebgate or something like that.
Oh, yeah, no, that's The Mirror. It's definitely The Mirror.
And it was just like everyone else was calling it The Fappening, but they refused to use it. And so they just kept being like, people are referring to it as Slebgate. I was like, no one has said that. That is not happening.
They love a good gate. They do The Mirror.
That's like a Gretchen from Mean Girls syndrome right there. Yes, going all the way back to 2004 for that reference. Oh, but stop Jesus trying Christ. To make Slebgate happen. Slebgate isn't going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. But I was wondering, do you think that some of the actresses that were in that are more likely to do nude scenes in their future movie now that there's already nude pictures of them out there? I mean, Scarlett Johansson this year came out and did that. I know she wasn't part of this leak, but as just kind of an example.
You know, I think of everything.
I can't remember half the actresses that were on there, to be honest.
Has Megan Fox done a nude scene?
I don't think so. I think she did something in Jennifer's Body or something like that that was like almost a nude scene. But
I think Jennifer Lawrence done one in one of her other movies as well.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, if it were me, I would kind of be deterred from doing a nude scene after this. Not that anybody wants to see me do a nude scene. But
well, I mean, there's always the Halle Berry type approach where it was like a million a breast or something is what she charged when what Swordfish, I think it was the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like if we're looking at this from a wrestling context, which is how I look at everything now in my life, I think the first reveal, which I think was taken away from them, and the first reveal is the most special. So now if they do a nude scene, it's like, I've seen it before.
But as a wrestler, you got to be like, you got to honky tonk that stuff. You got to be like, I'm going to go town to town, showing my butt. and you know, I sing my song, show my butt. I sing my song and I get out of there. And
yeah, but
so,
Shawn Michaels did that already in 96, and look what happened there.
That is true.
That's the tagline for this podcast, the one where we sing our songs and show our butts. All right. Let's move on to match of the year. We've got a lot of topics to cover here. These award shows always go long, so let's try and make this the shortest one. Match of the year. I'm going to start first for this one, just because I haven't watched a lot of indies this year. My schedule has just... Like, this is the first year where I actually have had to go and do things in life, which is new to me. And so the first thing I think to put on the back burner was the indie scene, unfortunately. But like Chris said, when you hear that something is worth watching, you go out of your way to watch it. And that's what I ended up picking was a part of the G1, which I think is being proclaimed as the greatest wrestling tournament of all time. And that's AJ Styles versus Minoru Suzuki from the G1. That match just blew me away. But I wanted to ask you, Chris, because this is being, again, praised as the greatest wrestling tournament of all time. How much of the G1 have you gotten to see? And do you think, just from your school of thought, statistically thinking or what have you, do you agree with that statement? Was this the greatest tournament of all time?
I haven't seen much of the G1, and I do think in terms of the quality of the production of everything that happened there, I think if it works, it works. And I don't think people were complaining about the wrestling. I don't think they were complaining about the booking, and I don't think they were complaining about the people involved with it. So I think it worked on all those levels. And, you know, it's impossible to ever say what is the strongest or the weakest, because it's like you go back to the pay-per-views in the 80s that were not necessarily the best ones. Yeah. But at the same time, there's stuff Macho Man did, even in his jobber matches, that is so much more compelling than what a really good, well-worked match might look like today. Oh, yeah. And it's just that star power is there. And so for me, I think there's good star power in New Japan. And that's what makes it really efficient, is that it's not all just like, you know, stars from other feds coming in to work really good matches. It's that they have a lot of homegrown talent. And they've rebuilt this company over year, over year, over year after, you know, such a debacle 10 years ago. You would have thought this thing was on its last legs. And I was on a different podcast a couple days ago, and I was just talking about how even if WCW survived as a brand in WWE, we lost the territories a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so the quality of wrestling has changed over the last 10 years here. Not good or bad, but the ability to learn a style and then execute that style in other countries, it's a dead art. There's very little of that going on. And so the fact that New Japan has been able to develop its own style, has been able to bring in talent from other countries, both from Mexico and from the United States and Canada and Europe, and really, you know, devise a way, a new style of wrestling that is innovative and interesting enough that you have guys in the WWE who are going out of their ways to watch it and talking about how much they love Nakamura and Shibata and things like that.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge plus in their column there, because they've done so many smart things, and the fact that a couple of years ago they got on the iPay-per-view train and they started getting money from overseas on that, and now they've launched their own streaming service. And we can start watching this stuff, and it's available at a larger rate than ever. AXS is putting them on television.
Yeah.
And, you know, they got a lot of good stuff going for them right now. So I can't hate on it. And, you know, it's always going to be personal preference what you love to see. But I thought it was fantastic work this year from New Japan. Nothing but thumbs up.
By the way, Faraz, I don't know how much you pay attention to Japan, but a trivia question for you, since you always put me on the spot with trivia. Let me try that again. Shinsuke Nakamura is a wrestler in New Japan. Who in the WWE has gone on record and said, this is my favorite wrestler right now?
Go on, tell me.
Bray Wyatt. Bet you bet you wouldn't have guessed him as a New Japan
watcher. No, you're right.
Yeah, but apparently he sits in his rocking chair and watches.
Wait. No, he doesn't have a rocking chair anymore.
Oh, that's right. It was destroyed a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, let me hear your favorite match this year for us.
I found this really tough because, like you, I kind of try and keep abreast of everything, but my main focus is obviously the WWE because they're right. The biggest. And there were some really, really good individual performances and matches this year. Again, I like to give a notable mention. Daniel Bryan and Triple H was wonderful at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I don't think it gets the credit that it's due, but it was very good.
It doesn't get the credit it was due because we expected a finish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But The Shield versus Evolution.
Yes.
The second one.
Yeah.
Was booked perfectly.
I can't decide which one I liked more, the second one or the first one.
They were both very, very good.
The first one was good because I think it was just the idea of watching these two stables fight each other. And then the second one, I think, was good because we didn't expect it to be as good as the first one.
Yeah,
and it was.
Exactly. And we didn't expect it to be a clean sweep. It was a shutout.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. That's what I had on my ballot before I said, oh, you know what? The G1 was this year, wasn't it? And I ended up changing. But that's what I had for the longest time on this ballot for I switched it.
Chris, also, you know, the Shield and the Wyatts had a very good match at Elimination Chamber.
Yeah. And
well,
the Shield,
I'm glad you said that because that's actually my pick for match of the year. It's perfect segue.
Yeah, for segues. Go on, Chris.
Because I was there live and that always adds a little bit more to it. Like, I remember WrestleMania in Atlanta, I was there live, and there was some stuff that now I don't feel like going back and watching again, but there at the show, I really enjoyed. And in fact, I was at Bragging Rights 2009, which is a legendarily not popular show. I went home and thought it was a great time. I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Was that the one with DX and Captains of Team Raw?
I think this one was the one where Cena was like the referee for the Orton Barrett match. And,
Oh, right, 2010.
And if he lost, he had to join join Nexus
or
get fired. And it just was not a very popular match. Let's put it this way. God, who's the guy who had the crazy braids? Tyler Rex was on the pay-per-view. Put the depth quality that we had going on there.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, so the Elimination Chamber. So I loved it. It was a crazy brawl. It was enjoyable. And I really felt it was the first really good match out of the Wyatt family that they had really had. They had done a lot of, just beat-em-up matches.
Yeah.
Their series with Tenzai and Clay was uneven, to say the least, where it sometimes looked really sloppy or sometimes it could look really good. And that was the first time that you really saw them stepping up. And, of course, they had three more great matches with them. They had one on March 3rd. They had one on April 8th. But this was the first one, and I really feel like this was the shot in the arm where the Wyatt family especially wanted to prove that they could hang with the Shield and step it up. And I really enjoyed watching that. So I'm glad you mentioned that match because, people have rated some of the other matches even better. But that was the one that's going to stand out in my mind for the longest time as being a crazy draw. You know, like the 2 out of 3 falls match with the Wyatts and the Usos was a fun match.
Yeah.
Was, again, the people there trying to say, like, look at it. We want attention. Pay attention to us. We're going to show everybody up. In terms of great matches for the year, you know who has the most 3-star rated matches or higher from Dave Meltzer this year?
Who would that be?
Randy Orton.
I thought you were going to say Randy Orton.
Yeah. You know, he's like him. The other people is Cena and then Ambrose and Rollins and Cesaro and Reigns and Bray. But Orton's at the top there with 16-plus matches. And he just kind of falls under the radar because, A, he's not on TV right now, and he's probably going to make his big comeback tomorrow, or what it'll be last week by the time this thing airs. But he's just one of those guys who's very steady, and he has a style that some people like and some people don't. I myself completely waver between enjoying it and kind of abhorring it. Like, I did not enjoy his match with Jericho that he had the other day, but I've liked a lot of his other stuff he's done with Cena. So, you know, it's just kind of funny to me that, like, he can have the most of the year, and yet no one is thinking about him for Wrestler of the Year, Match of the Year, Promo of the Year, any of that stuff. He's just kind of had a year.
But you know what the interesting thing about Orton, too, is up until recently, his promos really haven't been much. And I think when you think of Randy Orton, you think of his promos, and so you don't really think of, man, this guy has been so good in the ring. But it's true. You're absolutely
right. He's very consistent.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all that he's had so many of those great matches or highly rated matches because, again, his promos are like, we're like, ah, I don't know. But when he gets in the ring, every time you're always like, wow, that was a really good match. Now, recently...
his promos have been awesome.
He has been awesome with his promos. And I don't know if that was because he knew he was getting time off soon or what it is, but his promos have been, just him as a personality, it's been absolute fire, and I'm really excited for him to come back.
I actually like the stuff he did with Reigns when he kind of flipped out on Reigns on that episode of Raw, when he went ballistic.
Yeah. Also the longest beatdown in the history of life. But it's quite long. All right.
The moral of that story is don't steal from Randy Orton.
I guess so, yeah. all right, so this one, because some of us don't like to read, DVD of the year, and usually I just go based on WWE's offerings, and I don't know, this year kind of slim pickings.
It's been dry this year.
Yeah,
I keep it.
Yeah.
There's one outstanding release, though, this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can think of, I don't know if
There's two, in my opinion.
I don't know if we're thinking of the same one, but let's start with you for us, since we haven't started with you yet. What was your DVD of the year? And I think we have the same pick.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman.
Yes, that is my, that is mine as well.
I chose that as my Blu-ray of the year.
Ah, that's
because
true.
I went as far as to buy a Blu-ray player specifically so that when I got that was the thing that moved me over the edge. And then it was back ordered for so many weeks that I didn't even get it. So I was so angry.
Yeah. But I guess the amount of people that bought the DVD, I think, shows too, like people I think universally hate Paul Heyman, but I think they hate him so much that they appreciate his genius. And I think the fact that the Blu-ray was back ordered for so long kind of shows that, yeah, in fact, we respect Paul Heyman. But Chris, what was
and any 3-disc DVD that you can fill the last 2 discs up with promos is always good.
Oh man, absolutely.
I loved that stuff of him, even in AWA, where it's just him with a stool and they just let him cut these insane promos holding the phone.
Yes.
And it was just him just going off and doing what he wanted to do. And I enjoyed it so much watching that. And it's so funny with him how duplicitous he is, where, you know, as a fan, you can't help but like him now. And yet you'll still talk to people who hold so much grudges against him.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to forget that, you know, he did in many ways lie to a lot of people straight faced.
Yes.
And you now it's this endearing quality, like it's, you know, fun little goofy thing. But it's funny. Well, you will talk to some people and they still have a lot of animosity towards him. But as a performer, I just think he's been fantastic.
Yeah, he's been great. What was your pick for the DVD?
Oh, I didn't have one, really. The Blu-ray was just my whole joke. I mean, I think the Ultimate Warrior documentary they had on the network would have been my second one. And I think that was also used on their DVD in some way. And so that I thought was, you know, in terms of a story that somehow wrote itself at that last moment. You know, like between this and Wrestling with Shadows, can you imagine two events where you had cameras present for interactions in the backstage life of the WWE and you captured a moment that was only going to happen once in this case?
Yes.
Ultimate Warrior dying unexpectedly, the whole Montreal Screwjob. I mean, it's just amazing when you think about the timing and the chance that was going to happen that way.
Yeah, that too. That's a moment worth remembering since it's the end of the year. Just the way all those things came together. It's going to be a story that people aren't going to stop talking about for a long time. It was
a very emotional weekend, that particular weekend, the WrestleMania weekend.
Man,
all in all, it was just, it was exhausting.
Yes, it was. You thought, just when you thought it was over with the Raw, and then you get the Warrior stuff, and it's just like, man, that was one hell of a couple of days. All right, so let's switch gears. A basically unanimous pick for Mr. E. Dangerously there, which is good. I'm glad. That's our first unanimous pick of the show, I think. And it might be our last, actually. So pay-per-view of the year, I had a lot of trouble with this. So I almost kind of hoped that I almost wanted to pick an NXT special.
You could. That's a pay-per-view. By technicalities.
Well, technically it might be, but I didn't. Although, I if I could, I would probably pick the one with Breeze and Zayn.
Is that the Evolution one?
I forget the names. Breeze and Zayn. I think just because Breeze and Zane, like, you, I kind of went into it with the expectation that those two, it was going to be more of a like a squash match for Zane where he would just beat Breeze, but they completely made me eat my words because it was more of Breeze's coming out party in the sense that he was able to keep up with him and ultimately win. So I thought that was pretty cool. And also, of course, the show with Zane and Cesaro where they just went out there and tore it up.
Tore it up. That was the first one. Takeover. Yeah. That was a takeover.
Those are some great shows, man. And I still haven't watched the most recent one, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. But ultimately, I gave the thumbs up to I really couldn't think of anything. So I kind of looked at SummerSlam, but I ended up going with WrestleMania just because of the just because of the historical significance of it, and also the story that you know, the Daniel Bryan story, the Undertaker story. I mean, there was there's a lot of historical stuff there that isn't going to be, and you know, Warrior too. So that's why I ended up picking that pay per view. But it was a hard year for pay per views in WWE, Chris.
Yeah, I agree. I really struggled to say that there's one that was a standout. I think ROH really getting in bed with New Japan this year, and between Global Wars and War of the Worlds that they did in the beginning of May. I think that was a really, you know, special thing. You had your AJ Elgin and Okada three-way. You had Young Bucks and Fisher O'Reilly. You in the other show, you had Cole Steen. You had Young Bucks and Kozlov, Romero, Shelly, Kushida. You know, there's a lot of great stuff going on there. I think for WWE, I would probably pick SummerSlam just because that Lesnar-Orton squash was so memorable. I'm sorry, Lesnar-Cena squash was so memorable.
Yes.
And Reigns-Orton was kind of a fun coming out for Reigns. You know, probably his best match I can think of, as especially as a singles match. And that was a really fun show. What really struck me, I think TNA's Slammiversary in Texas deserves an honorable mention for, you know, the one bright spot for TNA this year, because they had a lot of fun matches on that show. They figured out a way to include some Von Erich nostalgia.
Yes, that's what I enjoyed.
That's honestly the best part.
Yeah, if they have to go out with a bang, you know, if they were going to fail as a company this year, that should have been like their crowning achievement. Is like that was a kind of a fun show to like demonstrate what they could do if they put it all together. And as a struggling company, I really respected their ability to market and profit in that show. And so that's the best TNA show. I think the best WWE show. You got WrestleMania, you got SummerSlam, but no one show blew us away. And I don't even think this year's TLC. I think it's going to be good. It's a very strong card in terms of good workers wrestling each other. You know, Ziggler, Harper, they're going to work really hard.
Oh yeah, they are.
Is it going to be the best show of the year? I'm not 100% on that. So I think New Japan probably deserves the crown for best pay-per-view of the year, and it could be probably any match from the G1 that you want to call a pay-per-view.
Mine was SummerSlam, because I just couldn't think of anything else, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a tough year, man.
It was a really tough year. I mean, the Lumberjack match that we all thought was going to be crappy between Rollins and Ambrose was brilliantly done.
Yes, and you know what? I remember going into that one because, first of all, they made that announcement on SmackDown, which is the first sign of like, all right, they don't care about this match. And it was a Lumberjack match when, at that point, that feud was super hot. And I was very annoyed because I thought, oh, man, they're just going to water down this thing. And you know what? To be fair, they did end up doing it, but they ended up turning it around at the end. But the Lumberjack match ended up being really good. I think they worked really hard, and it opened a lot of eyes to what these guys were doing at the time. So
it was one of the few cards where they had two Divas matches on it. One of them was quite good, and the other one was crappy.
Well, you are, for some reason, in love with the one that was good. So, all right. one thing about 2014 that I've really enjoyed, guys, is the internet meltdowns that we've seen. and this happens a lot. Just feuds on the internet. You know, we've got like Chris Brown, and I think last year we had Amanda Bynes, and just I you know, some things are kind of serious, but just the internet meltdowns, man. Social media makes it so much fun to just stay abreast of people going nuts on the internet. I think just last week there was like a guy that went nuts on a Chinese restaurant because they charged him like $1 extra for Chinese food, and he just went berserk. It was great. But and people going nuts on the internet, I think, is one of my favorite things, which is why we included this award, the Social Media Moron of the Year Award, also known as the Vince Russo Award, which I think we might have to rename that because he hasn't really been too stupid this year for us. He's just been shilling his new website or whatever he's doing.
Pyro and Ballyhoo.
Yes.
Well, no, he has been stupid. He sent, I don't remember from earlier this year. He sent a TNA into a lot of trouble with Spike earlier this year.
Actually, you know what? That's true. I think it might be because of him that they had to switch stations. So I retract that statement. I think
he's been such an idiot. When he sent an email to the PW Insider, the owner of PW Insider, who also has a name Mike.
Yes.
And he sent him Mike Tenay's notes.
Well, what are you going to do? Some people don't know how to use Gmail very well, apparently. Anyway, I gave it to the Chicago Raw crowd because I don't know if you guys remember at the very beginning of the year, CM Punk left.
The hijacked Raw?
Oh, God. That hashtag was everywhere. I was just – by that point, I was already over it. Very annoyed by this crowd. Very annoyed by everyone just trying to take over the show, ruin people's promos. I just I didn't enjoy the first couple months of 2014 just because of that.
No, I'm with you. I completely agree.
Yeah.
You know, I chose a TNA moment which almost went unnoticed, but was just so perfectly demonstrated what the company is like. And it was, I think it was Dixie Carter was trying to fight with the Menagerie or the Circus or whatever they're called. And they tweeted out from the wrong Twitter account. And so instead of it going out from the Dark Circus account, it went out from the TNA official website account. Of like, we're coming for you, TNA. We're going to beat you up or whatever it was. And luckily somebody caught it and took a picture of it. But it was just like, it was the perfect example of what happens when the company runs the accounts literally to the point that they're logging in with the wrong thing. It was, you know, equivalent to, I think it was someone at FEMA or something who was playing the Kim Kardashian iPhone game. And they, you know, posted through the official FEMA account. I just reached this level. Join me in Kim K's, you know, dress hunt game. And so it's that level of it when people are obviously using it and it just completely shatters the expectation of reality, which is always like wrestling is meant to have a suspension of disbelief. But at the same time, we're always demanding that you give us the least amount of confusion. So pretend like things are real. It's such that we don't have reverse battle royales that equal our new ranking system. On a 72-point system that makes no sense, you know, that kind of crap. So it was just the perfect TNA moment. And if I can find a copy of that moment, I know Voices of Wrestling and David Bix caught it. So I'll retweet that out. But that's my choice for social media moron of the year.
Oh, God. I think I just actually, now that you mentioned David Bix, I want to change my next award category, but we'll get to it. Fraz, what was your social media moron?
No, I'm with you. I was with you with the hijack Raw stuff.
All right. Let's
pointless and petty. Before we move on, let's do some pop culture stuff.
All right, let's do it.
Music has had its ups and downs this year.
Yes.
I think.
Anaconda for us. That's what 2014.
Let's move on.
That's what 2014 is going to be known for, is that song and that video.
No, shut up. There have been some really outstanding artists, but I think the man who's had the most influence over this year by a country mile has been Pharrell Williams.
Yes,
he's been everywhere.
Literally everywhere,
putting out music, releasing his own albums. His hat's been everywhere.
2014 is the year of Happy, which is okay. I'm gonna go on record. Happy is a very good song. However, I heard it way too much this year.
Yes, no, I'm with you.
Granted, I do contemporary hit radio, but even for a DJ, I've heard way too much of that song this year.
Well, and he was a judge on The Voice,
yeah,
and things like that. You know that, which is incredible momentum for someone. And so it's incredible how much and how many different places he's showing up, and how influential he's being. And he's a young guy too. Like, isn't he only like 32 or so?
He's only like 32, 33, and he's been around for a good 15 years producing for artists like Usher. He's been doing Usher stuff since the 90s, Ludacris since the 90s. He's been, you know, he's produced for JT and all them. So
when I was in college, I remember Nerd is the thing that he was kind of known for.
Yes, he's a member of Nerd. Neptunes is where I know him from, where he's for his production.
Yep, yep.
Also this year, we've had a Taylor Swift album, which I know Des hates.
He's 41, by the way, so we're way off.
Yeah, he's just very young looking. He has the Benjamin Button syndrome.
He has the Usher syndrome, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, the Taylor Swift album. By the way, let me do the thing on Taylor Swift because, okay, I listened to the new Taylor Swift album recently, only I listened to it with my deaf friend, and we got basically the same experience out of it. Okay, so I think the most interesting with Taylor Swift this year is her move to take stuff off of Spotify. Which is more and more becoming the way that young people listen to music. And I think she's Taylor Swift. She can do what she wants. But she's, I think, agreeing to not have that relationship with young people in a way. So I don't know how much longer.
23, 24, right?
Yeah. So I don't know how much longer we'll see that her stuff off of Spotify. I know Spotify didn't take it very well.
I think you can survive if you're that level of star where you're able to, you know, be inundating yourself into the culture. I was telling my wife this earlier today about how this year Comedy Central found a way to teach me about comedy again. I've always loved comedy, but I'll admit I stopped really paying attention to stand-ups a while ago. But when At Midnight started to bring them on as guests, I started to rediscover people that I never knew about, and I thought they were hilarious, and I started watching them, and now I go out of my way and I'll watch their Netflix specials. And I was like, Comedy Central figured out a way in the modern age to reintroduce me into what used to be stand-up, and short attention span theater, and all the ways that I used to find comedians. They found a way to reintroduce me to them. MTV and VH1, on the other hand, are doing less and less and less of teaching me about new music and new artists on the rise. And it's just kind of funny to me where, like, it is that some, you know, we're all faced with this idea of how do you reintroduce yourself to the new people? And like, you make the great point. Spotify is an excellent way that a lot of times the, if you like this, you might also like this type stations will generate music and interest. But I've grown more out of touch with music than ever this year. So it's funny to me. And it's so much like, there's such weird cross-branding. Like, to me, I don't know why Taylor Swift is at the Victoria's Secret fashion show. It seems like if I was her and her image, that would not be the image I'd want to be associated with.
Yeah, she's meant to be the teenage idol. I didn't get that either.
Yeah, and so I get that, you know, it's popular. It's going to be on a lot of TV sets. But at the same time, I'd be like, is that really what – if you pretend you're a feminist on any level, that's what you want to be associated with right now. But that's just me.
Now, speaking of being in touch, and I want to intersperse the pop culture stuff, but I think speaking of like being in touch with other people and celebrities, I think that's a good jumping point into the social media best use of social media award. And just to play on what we were talking about earlier, my pick is CM Punk because he's, I think, been super smart this year with social media. He hasn't always been. But I'm almost tempted. I'm not going to, but I'm tempted to change it to Paul Heyman just for the arguments just for the arguments he's had with David Bix on Twitter, particularly.
I thought that's where you're going with this. I was going to say Heyman is taking great joy in trolling Ed Bix. And I know Dave and I talk to him a lot actually, but, it is hilarious how Heyman has decided to just go after him at random points. And some of it is a work and some of it is just, you know, I think Heyman just gets fired up and he's a passionate guy and he just enjoys seeing people get riled up when he wants to get riled up. So it cracks me up when he does that.
And if I were in Bix's shoes, to me, it would be a dream come true. Like, I know he's a professional.
You're getting trolled by Paul Heyman.
Yeah, I know he's a professional and he cares about the newsletter. But if it were me, I would just be loving every minute of it.
Now, I can't speak for Dave, so I don't know what David feels about it one way or the other. But, it's something else. I think for me, for a wrestler standpoint, I think Ryback has been my most amusing guy on social media.
Yeah.
Because there's some people that come across like dicks on social media and you'll be like, oh, that's not a good play for them. Where on the other hand, I feel like Ryback, I was just like, he's embraced it to a level where it's very amusing to me that like he gets people really riled up by tweeting things and deleting it and tweeting and deleting it. And so I really enjoy that. I think that's really funny to me is anytime you have a guy who figures out a way to make himself relevant through that. And it just goes more to prove that there's nothing you can do to make Curtis Axel interesting ever.
God. Honestly, Ryback's Twitter persona has been so much more captivating than anything he's done on WWE TV, television. Yeah. Although,
with the exception of, did you see the promo between him and Curtis Axel?
Oh my God, yes! I was about to bring that up.
All the great teams of prior years.
And then the end, he's like, "I'm sure we'll get together in 5 years, and we'll probably lose." That was the best line. Love that line.
I'm gonna take mine out of wrestling though.
All right, go for it.
Lupe Fiasco.
Yes, again.
He was,
okay.
He was, who kind of, you can be quiet for like 3 or 4 months on Twitter, but then it explode.
No, when we get to a point where we create an entire segment based on what this person said on Twitter. Yeah,
what this person says for Culture My Pop, and then he'll go silent on us.
Okay, so to recap.
For like a portion of this year, Des and I were a part of an exclusive club.
Yes.
Because he locked his Twitter to the public. He protected his tweets.
Speaking of internet meltdowns, man, this guy has lost it on Atlantic so many times to the point where I think Atlantic has just gone, okay, do what you want. We just want to be out of this contract with you.
Put this album out.
January 15th, I think, by the way, is release date. So, yes, Lupe Fiasco has just been great on social media. Not only that, but also somebody who engages with people in humanitarian, philosophical discussions. He is a he is quite the bright person. Yeah.
Talib Kweli has also been very good, but that's just another thing.
So that's a great use of social media. I agree.
You know who hates social media, though?
Vince McMahon after the Austin interview. That was the best.
Triple H goes out of his way deliberately to annoy the internet.
Yes, he does. It's pretty funny.
He will make a point of it on Raw.
Yes, he will. That's also a good use of social media.
It is.
Though I think Triple H's biggest enemy is the call waiting music at the beginning of conference calls.
He hates it.
he every conference call, every NXT, you know, press thing, he just loves talking about it. And it's almost become a meme in itself now that we know he's going to bury it. And I'm really waiting for the, you know, Maestro version 2, which is going to just be a guy who is going to be – whose job it is to play the, like, entrance music for NXT wrestlers or something. And it's just going to be a guy who's – the new character is just a troll Triple H.
No, it's going to be Motorhead. They're going to sign an exclusive deal with Motorhead to provide the official hold music of the WWE.
For the NXT,
you know, that's going to be just like when Eric Bischoff was such a big Kiss fan that he started signing official deals with them to make sure that the wall was or the Demon was part of the co-main events of so many WCW pay-per-views.
Yes, I remember.
You're my favorite.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. All right. For us, have there been any notable retirements in music this year? I know that happens from time to time.
Notable retirements in music? Lupe Fiasco has threatened it on many occasions this year.
He's not gonna. He's gonna be so happy going to when he's done with Atlantic.
He's gonna do independent stuff.
Yeah,
I think.
Just like what he's been doing with stuff on SoundCloud lately. He's just been throwing it out there with no regard for making it a single or selling it on iTunes.
He's just putting it out there. Yeah. You know what's been cool? It's been the year of the hologram. Also, that's another fad that's happened this year.
That is a thing.
Like we had Tupac earlier this year.
Well, Tupac was a couple years ago, wasn't it?
It was this year. We Snoop Dogg.
Okay, so I guess they did it again, because I remember it was a big deal. Coachella.
We had Biggie this year.
I don't know that.
We also had Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that's the one that I remember, is Michael Jackson.
Who also put an album this year, which is all right. But yeah, there's been a lot of hologram-based stuff, but no, there hasn't been any retirements.
Well, in the wrestling world, I don't know about retirements. I guess Punk maybe counts as a retirement. He's going into something
UFC,
something else. So yeah, he's doing retirements. Just recently, we saw Corey Graves has been forced to retire, unfortunately. But he's doing commentary now with NXT, which is a good. I think at least he has something to do. And
yeah, but there hasn't been a big retirement this year, has there?
Well, I guess possibly, and this hasn't been announced, but possibly Undertaker has had his final bow this year. So I don't know. I
think there's some guys that are, now that they're out of WWE, they're going to be a fading star for a while. So someone like Brodus Clay, I don't know if we're going to hear or see much from Brodus Clay in the next couple of years here. And I don't know if you saw the picture of him from the autograph signing a couple days ago where he did not look too happy.
Yeah, he was in the UK. He wasn't happy.
He was most unhappy looking. You got guys like Drew McIntyre who, you know, was faced with the decision and seems to have done a good job kind of reinventing himself. Obviously, Alberto Del Rio leaving WWE. He's everywhere now. You know,
he just signed with Ring of Honor. He just done a deal with the Ring of Honor.
So. And he just won the AAA title. And so he's been huge. Christian is really the big question mark in terms of notable retirements as a guy who hasn't wrestled since March. And, you know, at this phase of the game. I'm not convinced he's necessarily coming back. Same with Rey Mysterio. Really unclear what his contract status is.
Although that's very.
I think he needs to retire for his own leg, for his own knee's sake.
Well, I don't think Mysterio wants to retire. I just think he doesn't want to work for WWE anymore.
I think that's exactly what's happening. And even have someone like Darren Young, who we haven't heard from or seen since March.
Yeah.
I think he's just out on injury, isn't he? But obviously. Who knows what's happening with him? Jinder Mahal, when he got cut, not exactly a guy that you expect to be ripping up the scene. Ted DiBiase, I think he technically retired last year.
He retired, yeah.
Yeah.
JTG, another guy that, you know, has done a couple like reunions with Crime Time, but we haven't seen a lot from. Yoshitatsu came back to Japan and probably broke his neck on AJ Styles clash. John Morrison kind of reinventing himself with Lucha Underground. Great Khali could possibly be a retirement here. It's talking about a guy who is quietly left the WWE and has been in terrible shape.
What about Santino? Santino retired this year.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
Though he was already talking about coming back and then just like 2 days ago said that his neck was broken or his neck was still messed up from his last surgery. Tensai actually is a guy who I guess you could say retired this year.
Very quietly.
He really moved into an announcer role and trainer role down at NXT.
Complete with changing his name and everything.
Yeah. Tyler Rex retired a while ago. Just looking through this list here. Kurt Hawkins got kicked out, but I think he's going to be one of those guys who's going to be kicking around for a while on the indies.
Oh, yeah. He loves that stuff. You know, he lives for like PWG and things like that, so if he can make it there.
Obviously, Batista's another guy that it's going to depend. Is he ever going to come back? Because the rumor I'd heard about Batista with his huge success in Guardians of the Galaxy is
he's just signed another movie, hasn't he?
Yeah,
he kind of got a Jonah Hill deal, and by that I mean he worked for very little money to do that thing in terms of what he signed. Is I don't think he ended up with very good merchandise rights or anything else off that Guardians of the Galaxy deal.
But amazing credit.
Springboarding him into all this other stuff, and so that's where the big money is.
Yeah, he's doing a James Bond film now, so.
Exactly. Yeah. And so he's like The Rock, where it's a guy that is going to be so busy and getting older and older. And unlike The Rock, he doesn't quite have that level of notoriety. So I don't know whether he's ever going to be back. You know, it's hard to say whether you're going to see a 55-year-old Batista coming back to the WWE for one match. He might show up as a guest this or guest that, but we could have seen the last of Batista.
And just a couple weeks ago.
It's bad enough seeing a 44-year-old Batista in a ring.
And just a couple weeks ago, we saw Seth Rollins basically trash Batista, saying, well, you know, Batista's a terrible wrestler, he's a terrible actor. I don't think you would want to say that stuff on TV unless you had a good relationship with him at the moment.
You'd think that. I mean, I agree. But we've seen WWE do that kind of weird stuff before. But for me, it's going to be the Great Khali as my notable retirement of the year, because until I see him come back, Pride is dead. UFC, I guess, is signing weird freak show matches. I will pay to see Great Khali versus CM Punk on pay-per-view.
I would also pay a vast amount of money for that. I'm not going to lie.
But I think my favorite Great Khali moments, obviously his garbled speech, the Monster Mash Battle Royale or whatever it was in ECW, obviously feuding with Jinder Mahal over a turban and some convoluted relationship involving his sister's husband and Rajan Singh. But I think it was just when Kane and Khali were feuding and like one had the scythe and it was just the craziness going on there. And also my other favorite moment is Colin Delaney telling me that Great Khali hit him harder than any man has ever hit him in his entire life.
Oh, crap.
And this includes a guy who wrestled JBL and took the Batista bomb and lots of other things. But he just said, and Big Show beat him up, but he said Great Khali chopped him as hard as he possibly could on the top of his head. So that terrible looking chop is not worked at all. And that's what makes it even more hysterical.
Oh, I think my favorite Khali moment is him giving Caitlyn relationship advice. Yeah.
My favorite Khali moments have been those catchphrases that he used to do, that he recorded of other people's catchphrases.
Yeah.
They were wonderful.
They had fun with that for a while, didn't they?
Yeah. Also, also him teaching John Cena how to speak Hindi was fun.
That was fun. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the feud of the year. I think an honorable mention would be CM Punk versus everybody in WWE, basically.
Triple H versus the Internet.
That's another good one. I like that one. Yeah, I think I had a lot of hopes going into this one when they first started it. and then it sort of fell off a cliff, and then they managed to bring it back at the end. And then at the very last minute, they managed to piss me off with it. But I still liked it a lot, and that was Ambrose Rollins.
Yeah.
They did a, you know, it was a windy road with this one. I thought it could have been a lot better, but I still really enjoyed the high points. So that was my big feud.
I'm with you, because I thought through the whole summer, that was the feud that was interesting in bringing me to watch Raw every week.
Yeah.
I think the Authority feud has ebbed and flowed over the year here, but Stephanie McMahon has become such a great heel persona woman.
I agree.
That I do think that it would be underrating her if I didn't in some way mention that the Authority feud has set up some good programs, because, you know, Randy Orton coming back, it's going to make sense. Yes. Based on the Authority there. And for a little while, we were definitely building to some kind of a WrestleMania match about controlling WWE and all that, but that kind of fell apart. I love Rusev versus the World. And
yes.
Especially Rusev. Lana is wonderful, isn't she?
Yeah. Rusev versus giant dudes. Was it him versus Big E that had that fantastic pay-per-view match?
Oh, yes. With the,
where they
the,
just they the spear off just, the apron.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that kind of, like, I've always got into the Kozlovs and the Rusevs, and just crazy foreign heel comes in and destroys everybody for a while. Umaga, whatever it is, that's really fun for me. And that's a formula that works well. And forever. I get scared when I see them kind of messing with it.
Yeah.
I think this, one of the worst feuds of the year has definitely been Adam Rose versus the Bunny. But what's hilarious is, did you realize Adam Rose had like a 35-week winning streak? That was
what?
Never mentioned on
no,
wrestling.
Never.
He won every match for like the first 30 weeks of this year. It was very recent that he started to lose matches, and nobody cared. They never mentioned it. They never played it up. Nobody noticed. But if you actually go back and look at his record, you'll discover he just won straight. He's won as much as Luke Harper has lost since he won the Intercontinental Championship.
Oh, boy.
It's hysterical. And so that's just one of those other kind of weird things where it teaches you that it's not always about wins and losses as much as it is about making everything mean something. Yeah. So the Authority thing's meant something. Rusev has meant something. I'm really curious if, like you say, we're going to get payoff. Because Rusev versus The Rock was a really interesting moment this year, but a lot of people are saying, what exactly is that going to lead to? What is that? What's the value of that? The CM Punk thing has just been goofy. Yeah. I think it's almost funny to call that a feud of the year, because for 9 months we heard nothing.
Yeah.
You know, really between the time he left and now, it was all conjecture and discussion and this and that. And just now in the last, you know, 3 weeks has it all exploded. Like Dave Meltzer jokes that he now writes the CM Punk Observer, because 50% of his newsletter is dedicated to telling stories that were told on a podcast.
Yes. No, I agree. No, definitely trolling on the CM Punk thing. But no, it's absolutely true. I'm afraid, because I've heard rumors that they want to do, some people in WWE want to do Rock and Rusev. And that's I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know. I don't think The Rock would come back for a Rusev match, to be honest. That promo was fun. I really enjoyed it as a one-off.
Yeah, it was fine for one thing. I didn't really care. It was just there. All right, so we're going into...
You say that, but keep in mind, remember what The Rock's very first match back was? R-Truth and The Miz.
The epic. The epic the confrontation. Epic.
Yeah. Never before and never again. Yeah.
So let's not overthink what The Rock will and won't come back for necessarily.
Yeah. That's
granted,
a good
that
point.
Was an MSG. Let's be fair.
Yeah, no,
I'm just saying, like, sometimes we think, like, oh, he can't possibly work with that. It'd be like, Ron Killings was in The Rock's return match. K Quick.
The Miz.
Then The Miz.
NWA
the
champion.
Miz.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's very prestigious these days.
Oh, he was an NWA champion, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
That.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Also a former tag team partner of the illustrious Pac-Man Jones. Remember that?
The Two Live Crew.
Oh, God. All right. Promo of the year. There have been some great promos, most of them by Paul Heyman. So
Triple H has had some good ones this year, too, actually.
I went ahead and picked the one that I remember just gave me goosebumps when I watched it. And there are very few times where you watch a promo and you just feel goosebumps, like, wow, that... Fucking, you know, pardon the pun, but that one messed with my heart. And that was the WrestleMania, the right after WrestleMania promo, the night after.
The Warrior one.
No, the Paul Heyman promo, actually. After WrestleMania, where he's just railing that he beat the – not only did Brock Lesnar beat the Undertaker streak, but Antonio Cesaro conquered the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and he was just going to – him and his people were just going to run through WWE, and Brock Lesnar didn't need to be in WWE anymore because he had killed the legacy, and it was just an awesome promo that night. So much fire and there was
passion.
There was reality to it because this tangible thing of the streak had just ended. I thought it was perfect.
Ooh, okay, that's an interesting one. I'm going for another Paul Heyman one, though. I'm going for the one where he quoted Shakespeare, when he quoted poetry, just after, I think it was just before or just after SummerSlam. Mm. And he went on this 15-minute thing where he read a poem about how Brock Lesnar was going to kill John Cena.
Oh, was that when he battle-rapped? Or not battle-rapped, but he just rapped and mocked Cena. Yeah, that was pretty good, too. Yeah, just him goofing off and having fun. I think
my real one was just emotional, by the way. I think that should get a mention, personally.
Yeah.
The one on Raw?
Yeah, that was also very heavy. I think my favorite Heyman promo of all time, by the way, it didn't happen this year. I think it happened last year when he was feuding with Punk. And he just goes on like this 5-minute crazy man rant, like this 5-minute, he just going super fast like an old Southern manager. And then he just stops and he goes, "But I'm calm, CM Punk. I have my composure."
Awesome.
The Paul Kano was probably my favorite ridiculous moment from Paul Heyman, where I was like, he's just trying, he's going for it, even though this is ridiculous.
Oh, so good.
You know, there's nothing that's sitting out there that is like, you know, Mark Henry's heel promo on John Cena last year, from June of 2013. That was a fantastic moment where it was just like, that sticks with you. That was fun. That really caught me. There's been people giving passionate promos and this and that, but I can't think of anything short of the Paul Heyman stuff that's really stuck with me this year.
Oh, guys, what about the passionate Nikki Bella promo from SmackDown? That was something.
There was one?
Yeah, it was so good that they edited most of it.
Oh, okay. What about the Macho Man Randy Orton promo when he just came out and was really fired up?
Yeah,
that was really intense.
More, I think more
I wouldn't want to promo of the year. It was just fun.
Yeah, it was just more of like, I think the highlight there would be the brawl as opposed to the promo, because he just wanted to kick people's ass. Yeah, but he's been great.
I think the promos that set up the WLC match between El Torito and Hornswoggle were, you know, they're pretty compelling.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, I fast forwarded through everything that they were.
So did I.
I just couldn't. I think I was at a point where I just didn't want to.
I'm being facetious there.
Ah, good.
Triple H also did a promo where he had no voice.
That's true.
Earlier this year, it's weird.
Most times, actually, he likes to scream a lot.
Yeah, but he literally had no voice, and he still did this promo. I'm like, huh?
You know, for all I know, Chris, those promos between Torito and Hornswoggle could have been legendary. I really didn't watch anything.
I do think it's amazing that Hornswoggle has managed to, like, jump faction to faction to faction over this last year here.
Yeah, nobody's told him on it.
You know, 3MB, 3MB and a half for a little while there. And then he was with Slater Gator, which was kind of an underrated little thing this year, is Titus O'Neil's entire run with both Slater Gator and just in general as a singles wrestler has been a really fun C-show performer that's been underappreciated.
Yeah, and I think speaking of unappreciated performers, Tyson Kidd over the last couple of months, so not just in the ring, but he's just been so funny as a persona. He's been great.
Tweeting while there's a match going on.
Tweeting. After the girls win, he jumps around like it was all his plan. Like he's just awesome. I love that guy. We do Book of the Year. I don't know why we're doing it this year. I haven't read anything this year at all. Now I'm realizing.
Not wrestling wise. I still need to read that Jericho book.
Yeah, I need to read that one. I have the new Death of WCW, which I've read like the first two chapters of. I just, man, life is nuts. But I haven't really read anything. So I'm going to have to answer this.
It's tough. I did start reading that new Jericho book, and I got to admit, I lost interest in it and just stopped reading it. So I got to finish that up. Lex Luger's book came out last year, I guess it was. Let me see here.
That was awful.
Yeah, no, I'm just looking here at books that came out in 2013 or 2014. Bob Holly's book was really good, but that was last year.
Yeah.
I heard the Grappler's new book, Tom Martin really put that over on Observer Radio, that being a very decent book by the Grappler. And then, like you said, the re-release Death of WCW, which I think is probably the best thing that I'm reading right now. But yeah, it's a weak year for wrestling books that I'm aware of, at least. So I will have to.
Yeah.
I know that Greg Lambert is thinking of writing
do it,
the
Greg.
Second book.
Hey, Greg, listen to me. You need to do it immediately. Stop managing whoever you're managing.
Jimmy Havoc. Stop managing Jimmy Havoc.
Stop dealing with this Havoc character and just write more about British wrestling, please. And also come on the show again.
Yeah, because that was fun.
Speaking of, Bob Backlund released a book apparently this year. I never even heard about that.
Really?
Is it just him yelling "Never give up" in caps lock for like 200 pages?
I would hope so.
By the way, that needs to get mentioned too. Some of the Hall
of
Fame.
No, it doesn't.
The Mr. T thing needs to be mentioned somewhere in the show. Jesus, that was great.
No, it wasn't. It was 20 minutes.
It was awesome.
How long was it? 40 odd minutes. And Kane is apparently the person to get rid of overrunning Hall of Fame speeches.
He is apparently the light.
He's the director of operations. You got to keep things running smoothly.
That is true. That was the one time this year, I think, where Kane did his job. Wow. Yeah, so Mr. T versus Kane is actually my feud of the year, guys. I changed it.
Here's a Kane stat for you I was just working on. 51% of Kane matches on Raw or SmackDown do not have a clean finish. They either end with a count out, DQ, or double DQ, double count out, draw, whatever. 51%. So if you're in a match... Or a no contest. If there's a 1 in 2 chance, if Kane is in your match, it is not going to go well. It's 100% chance if Kane is in your match. But but what a great guy in terms of just like somebody who's willing to go to work, do whatever they tell him to do. They'll be like, you're going to get mustard smeared all over you. Can do whatever you need.
Yeah,
whatever you need.
Just goes out there week in, week out. And from what I've heard, everybody, they have nothing but respect for him. I mean, this is the year we got Jamie Noble and Joey Mercury back in the ring.
Yes.
So I can't help but love goons. I love Stooges. I love goons when they're in this thing. I'd rather watch these Stooges and goons than the Briscoes in a wedding dress match.
Yeah.
King of the Ring 2000. Oh, God.
Oh, Christ. okay. I completely lost my place. Ah, got it. Don't call it a comeback, which is, of course, the comeback of the year.
There is only one, really, isn't there? But I wouldn't even call it a comeback, would you?
Yeah, I was really thinking about it, but I just wouldn't call it a comeback because technically it's not a comeback.
He just made an appearance.
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and do yours first for us, because mine's kind of outside of the wrestling world for this one.
I couldn't really think of one offhand because, as you said, I guess Hulk Hogan coming... Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Coming back from obscurity.
Coming back from the old people's home in Florida.
Which, by the way, his grand swan song was Dixie Carter begging him not to go, which I want to remind everyone. Yeah,
I guess that's the biggest comeback of the year WWE-wise, because there hasn't really been any others.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
This was a tough category. I think, like I said, Jamie Noble coming back on the screen. Excited about that.
That was great.
I think Batista is another guy came back this year. And had a little bit of that fun that Batista had when he left. You know, that heel Batista when he was leaving was fantastic. We saw a little bit of that this year.
By the way, can I bring something up real quick? Because JB Noble wrestled one match on TV this year. And the announcers are going out of the way to like make it look like, oh, this guy's not even a wrestler. He's not, you know, he doesn't.
He's a former Cruiserweight champion.
This guy beat CM Punk for the Ring of Honor world title. And I know they can't talk about Ring of Honor, but I feel like now more than ever, they'd be like, oh, this guy beat CM Punk once or something. But he's just a loser.
Well, he's a former Cruiserweight champion. He beat Kidman and the like.
And then he lost to Hornswoggle or something. So maybe they don't want to bring that up.
Yeah. I think Goldust obviously being the guy that was able to not only come back and be great last year, but he's continued that streak.
Yes.
And in some ways really helped Cody Rhodes out of a tough place. So he's another guy coming back. Stephanie McMahon's first matches back in almost a decade, wasn't it? Of her returning to the ring twice, once for the Vicky Guerrero Slop Fest.
Oh, Jesus.
And once with the Bellas. And then, of course, with that one segment where, like, didn't she, like, hit someone off an apron and they had to sell it for, like, 10 minutes? But Stephanie McMahon, great outfit. A Manomi Toyota-esque outfit that I really enjoyed on her that time. So that was fun. Rikishi, of course, making a comeback. Scotty Too Hotty, let's not forget his NXT run. First time in many, many years that we saw.
Didn't Jake the Snake make a comeback at the beginning of the year, too?
That's right, yeah.
And Captain Comic in NXT. Chris Christopherson's son. Didn't he get fired and rehired in this period here?
I thought he got fired again recently.
Yeah, I think he did. So.
Oh, Jesus Christ, dude. Make up your minds. Do you want him or not?
But and the Vaudevillians, who have been away for almost 80, 90 years, and they've been reincarnated.
I know.
Back
oh, my
there.
God. By far, my favorite my favorite act in NXT. I make no bones. Like, I don't ever see them on the main roster, but I love what they're doing in NXT. So good. And for me, I went outside the world of wrestling because I really couldn't. Obviously, everyone's thinking about Sting, but I don't really consider that a comeback. More of a debut, believe it or not, fans.
Yes.
I actually went outside and I picked one of my favorites and new best friend, Weird Al Yankovic, who not only came back this year, but reinvented himself, showing that he can stay hip and consistent because he actually did a kind of a viral campaign where he released a new music video, I think, every day for like the first week or something.
Yeah, it was awesome. I really enjoyed that. He's great. When you were talking about Pharrell Williams, I immediately thought of his like his parody version of that, where I was like,
tacky.
Wow, he did a good job of like grabbing on to the songs that were zeitgeist right now and getting into that and talking about that. So yeah, I would agree with you completely on that.
And I'm excited now that he's done with his recording contract, where I think now his idea is to just be as current as possible and release songs
when he likes.
Yeah, at the peak of them actually being relevant. And I think that's very smart on his part. So I'm excited for what he does in 2015, if anything. But I think we might have a unanimous category here for this next thing for TV show of the year. And we never said wrestling TV show of the year, but mine's still a wrestling pick, believe it or not. But let's start with you, Chris. For what was your pick for TV show of the year?
I'd go with Fargo or True Detective. I don't know for wrestling TV show of the year. It can't be SmackDown.
Oh God!
Oh God, no!
It can't be. Main Event has been at least decent, but it's not incredible. Can I choose the episode of Primetime Wrestling from 1986 I watched today with
sure, why not?
Yeah.
Iron Sheik wrestling Corporate Kirshner.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
I still need to watch his documentary, by the way, the Sheik.
I'm afraid.
What was your picks of the year for this?
NXT for me.
Yeah, I picked NXT as well.
That's true. NXT. Yeah.
I think next year might be New Japan or whatever, but this year NXT has just been consistently the best wrestling show on TV. I mean, outside of wrestling, I would probably go with
Sherlock. Was that this year?
The very beginning of this year was Sherlock.
Doctor Who we've had.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as much as I love Doctor Who and the new Doctor,
it hasn't been a vintage series, has it?
I wouldn't pick it as my favorite TV show this year. It's been good, but
Citizen Khan has been very good this year. I think
it's been funny. I would probably go with I was watching something. Yeah, I don't know. I'd probably go with Sherlock. I mean, Sherlock is the only show where at the end of the season, I was awake at 3 a.m. alone and just applauded. So I think that's what I would go with.
I will give a lot of credit to Fargo as just being a fantastic, very long, very well-acted episodes. Really interesting.
Yeah.
And living in Minnesota, but not being from Minnesota, I was entranced in how they were able to encapsulate a local culture in different ways. And Martin Freeman did a wonderful job in that. Allison Tooney did a fantastic job, especially as a Texas girl playing a Minnesotan. And there's just a lot of really great stuff that was going on this year with that. And Grace Point, which is the remake of Broadchurch. Broadchurch was far superior, but Grace Point was so much better than I ever thought it was going to be. So I will say if anyone enjoyed Broadchurch, it is worth watching Grace Point as well.
By the way, we put it over earlier, but At Midnight also, if you're a comedy fan.
Yes.
Great.
At Midnight is probably my favorite new show of the year that I now binge watch. And South Park got good again, which it for a couple of years there, I kind of lost interest in. And now I'm really getting into again. And then, of course, the standards, the Game of Thrones. Silicon Valley was fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Year.
That show was so good.
That cracked me up. And their ability at the end of the season to turn the biggest dick joke ever into a compression joke is just amazing to me.
Yeah, and that helped me also discover Kumail Nanjiani, who is just a hilarious human being.
Exactly. And The Meltdown, which is another show on Comedy Central that hosted by Jonah Ray and Kumail Nanjiani, probably my favorite alternative comedy thing in years because it really strikes the balance between having people come out like Weird Al or Chris Hardwick or other people do some comedy, and then every time in every set they always have a absurd comedy section where someone will dress up as the Sheriff of Nottingham from Robin Hood and go out and try to blow members of the audience for 4 minutes. And it's just the most like absurd thing you've seen. But if you enjoy like crazy comedy, like alternative comedy out there, it's like a Dana Gould wet dream. It's so ridiculous and so fun. So The Meltdown is a really, really funny show that I hope people do go and check out. And it's just kind of a weekly series that they did for a while. And it's held for real in LA in the back of a comic book shop.
Yes.
And it's not a TV show, but I will say I finally discovered the How Did This Get Made podcast. With Paul Scheer and Jason Zoukaitis and all the other guys there. And that's been fantastic. I think that's been my funniest thing of the year and led me to go watch different movies just to see how ridiculous those movies were.
And since we're on this vein, I also want to put over the new Bill Burr special, where I've never been a big fan of Bill Burr. I've always been more of a relaxed comedy fan. But this new special, if you have Netflix, I really recommend you check it out. This guy just blurs the limits of what you can and can't talk about with it still being socially acceptable. And as somebody who studies comedy, it's just one of the best things you can do for yourself is to watch that special.
Can we talk about the worst show of the year?
The show you
enjoy hate watching the most? For me, it would have to be Mulaney, because it is such a awful piece of television that has been resurrected from the 80s.
Yeah,
yet I hate watch it every week. Just trying to understand, why did they do this? How could they have thought this was the right decision in each one of these junctures?
That's a guy
who's really funny in his comedy specials, was a great writer for SNL and done a lot of other things. And it's just like they made every wrong choice every time, every week.
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind.
Painfully, I agree. I love John Mulaney's comedy. I think he's super funny, super different in a way. I mean, you don't really get happy comedians anymore. And he's very, he's not your typical depressed comedian that you get now. But yeah, I was very optimistic for the TV show. And the first episode aired and I tried really hard to defend it. But it just got to a point where, no, this isn't working. Like, it's not. And they had a lot of faith in it, too, because they put it in the same block as like the Family Guy and the Simpsons and stuff. So they tried to make it mean something. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was a really big disappointment for him. All right. So
I stay quiet in this because I just watch Gordon Ramsay at the minute. Everything.
Yeah.
That's all I watch right now.
By the way, there's a show I just heard about for us, and it's probably, I don't know if it's still happening, but it's called The F Word. Where he just like shows you.
It's
how
an
to
old
do...
show. It's
yeah,
an old show.
I love that
Kitchen
show.
Nightmares. You're thinking of?
No. It's about like just creating really weird things. I know Kitchen Nightmares, but this is a different thing.
Oh, the F word. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that show. I just discovered it recently. But anyway,
Gordon Ramsay's a great man. I'm just a big fan. Anyway,
he's a great human being. But we've reached our final category, gentlemen, and this is named after acclaimed BBC Radio 1 DJ Charlie Sloth, the Charlie Sloth Award, also known as the Bad Man of the Year. And by bad man, we mean awesome.
We mean good man.
Yes. So who do you think is the coolest person of the year who's like radiated personality? And this could be from wrestling, from not wrestling. I forgot who we gave it to last year.
Can we give it to Charlie Sloth?
Because
he was everywhere.
Yes.
He's been everywhere this year, too.
If you're a wrestling fan, think of it as Dave Meltzer's Ric Flair Award, where he just gives it to the greatest person of the year, however that goes. But let's start with you, Fraz. Who was your bad man of the year this year?
I'm giving it to, again, Lupe Fiasco.
Yeah, he's been pretty
just
bad.
Because he's been very, he's been a bad man. He's been socially aware, as always, creates controversy, as always, but makes it interesting.
Yes. Yes, he does.
It's not like he's making really bad points either.
No. He has been controversial, but I think he's done it in a respectful way. And I don't agree with everything he says, but absolutely, he's been just great in terms of, because rarely do you have celebrities who raise like a social consciousness and who want to have this intelligent debate with people. And he's done a great job. So yeah, Lupe Fiasco has been very good. What about you, Chris? Who are you picking this year for your bad man?
I thinking about this, I needed to get that definition from you to be sure that I was understanding what I was picking here. But I think the guy that is going to be the most enigmatic person to me in WWE right now is got to be Damian Sandow / Mizdow.
Yes.
Because he has taken over the role of the goofy geek that is fun to watch. So Heath Slater had that for a little bit. Zack Ryder almost had it for a nanosecond. Mm-hmm. There's been lots of guys that have been interesting for a short period of time. But Sandow is such a fascinating character to me because, A, I've enjoyed when he was wrestler and when he was part of Road Scholars. I've enjoyed when he goes back to the Aaron Stevens days and it was him and Casey James hanging out on SmackDown, you know, fighting teachers' pets and things like that. But what I just enjoy about it is that it is the complete sideshow nature of wrestling, and it's being embodied in him right now. And it's fun. The guys enjoy it. He's enjoying it. He's giving it his all with the worst gimmick known to man. And, you know, it would die a terrible death if it wasn't with a charismatic fella like Damien Mizdow.
And you need to embrace that kind of character, and that's what he's doing. Because if you don't, it's going to fall.
Well, I mean, it's the Santino role, which is like you can put Santino up to a certain point, and it's just going to be a comedy mid-card act, but he was really good at it. And for a while there, I used to be like, why do they keep Great Khali employed? And then I went to a show, and Great Khali was in the opening match, and the fans loved him. They thought he was the coolest thing ever. And then he would dance with the kids after the show, and I said, oh, that's why he does it, because he's a sideshow. He gets over at what he's doing, and the people connect with him quickly, and it's fun, and it's easy, and that's a thing. And there's a lot of guys on the roster who don't connect with everybody. You know, Justin Gabriel's really talented, but a lot of people don't care about Justin Gabriel when he's out there. And so I love the fact that Mizdow has picked up that mantle that Santino Marella left to be the comedy guy. And I tell you, if we did another Santino Marella type spot where at the end of the Royal Rumble, he's one of the last three guys in the ring, everyone's going to go nuts because they love Damian Mizdow right now. And the act is not dead yet. It will
get
old.
The Elimination Chamber, was it a couple of years back?
Yeah.
Santino when he was in the final two with Brian.
Yeah, exactly. So those moments, that's huge. And I think that's really powerful, is that ability to you're bringing people to a show and you got to entertain a lot of people. And I tell you, my wife goes to a show with, you know, there's only so much of each element that she enjoys. And so she gets really into the Undertaker match because that entrance is fantastic. And she really enjoys, you know, a good high flying match. But a lot of the stuff is pretty boring. But something like Mizdow, that entertains her and that keeps her engaged. And I think that's a big deal in the area of sports entertainment. If that's what you're going to be, he's entertaining and he deserves the Charlie Sloth Mad of the Year award.
Yeah. Charlie Sloth, Batman of the Year, Damian Mizdow, and I'm going to keep mine also within the realm of professional wrestling, and well, kind of, I guess. And I'm giving mine to CM Punk. He's being a bad man.
Of course you would.
Just because, first of all, Chris, I am on this podcast. I have no shame of being the biggest CM Punk fan that I've ever known. And basically, I mean, just the fact that A, he's able to turn something and leave a giant company and just go do what he loves. He's doing what he wants to do, and that's fight in the UFC. And I firmly believe he's probably going to be murdered. I'm in that camp, but he's going to enjoy it. And so good for him. He's writing a goddamn Thor comic book. I mean,
I think there's only been like three or four guys who have ever been signed by UFC who were millionaires before they went into the company.
Yeah.
I mean, you got like James Toney, the boxer. He was probably pretty rich when he signed. You have – who were not ex-Pride guys, I should say, on top of that. So there was guys who made their money in other companies. You have like Brock Lesnar, obviously.
Brock Lesnar, yeah.
And you could even argue he was fighting in K1 before that. So he had proven himself a little bit. You have a guy like BJ Penn who was kind of a legend in the fighting community at the time there, but then you have CM Punk, and there's not a lot of other people I can even think of who are up that high. So it's so crazy to imagine that a guy who's already earned his money, his, you know, the FU money like they talk about, and he's made this decision, he's going to pursue it, and he's convinced them that it's worth doing, and that's the part that's amazing. This is the same company that was very reluctant to get in bed with Kimbo, was reluctant to start doing women's fighting with Rousey. You know, they've had a lot of reluctance, and so it's kind of incredible. And it says a lot about the dire state of their main event picture in 2014 that it kind of drove them to embrace this sort of decision making that I don't think they would have 2 years ago.
I'm a big fan of it. I just like they made the announcement and I was in disbelief. I was like, okay, really? And then like the very next thing I hear is I turn on this random classic rock station and the top of the hour, which is like the most important time for radio. And they play Cult of Personality. And I'm just like, yes, this is getting attention. This guy's having a great time. Good for him. And that solidified my bad man of the year, because he's doing what I want to do in life and just go through it, do what you want, have a good time, and worry about the consequences later. And
absolutely,
that's his life. And that's our award show, guys, for 2014. So thank you. Big thanks to the 1950 studio audience for joining us here. And thank you for joining us. I hope your holidays have been exceptional if you're listening to this on Christmas Day, first of all. Why?
God bless you.
Yeah. But thank you. And Chris, we're so happy that you could come on and chat with us, my man. Why don't you let people know where they can check out your podcasts and your other great stats reports that you do?
Oh, thanks. It's been great being on with you two, and it's fun to talk about this sort of stuff. You can find me on Twitter at Mukigana. Sometimes I write for the Bleacher Report, so you can look for my name there. I write for I'll have a piece on Figure Four sometime this next week here, probably about clean finishes. I will occasionally do podcasts, and it's called WrestleNomics. You can just Google WrestleNomics. It's on Stitcher Radio and Block Talk Radio. And sometimes I write for other places. Oh, I write over at Seeking Alpha whenever they do a financial report on WWE. And frankly, I owe so many projects to so many people. So someday I will finish my Kickstarter book. Someday I will finish all the other projects I promised to do for people. But you can always find me on Twitter at Mukigana, and that's the best way. And I really appreciate coming on the show, getting a chance to talk about this stuff and think about it in a way. And now I've learned who Charlie Sloth is, so my life is finally complete.
Yeah, boy! He's on the floor, blood! Yeah!
You can go get his mixtape now, if he's out.
All right. Thanks for listening. Remember, we'll be back with you on the day after the Tokyo Dome. That's going to be our first wrestling show. I don't know what the state of culture my pop is as you currently listen to this. I'm probably...
it's in limbo.
Yeah. I'm probably currently in Berkeley, unable to perform, as they say. However... we do have all sorts of stuff from throughout the year you can listen to on thingsdesays.net. And follow me on Twitter at DesDelgadillo. Faraz is at The Wisp. Hashtag West Coast Wispy, which is in danger of not happening. And Facebook.com/ThingsDesays. Use the Amazon link. Use iTunes. Do that stuff. And if you don't, for the last time of this year, Faraz has got two words for you.
Piss off.